Fiends.
Take it, Diana.
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Podbay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus aurelius by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 365 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Is it working, Ben and Dobby? Can you feel it?
I feel it. I can feel it.
Sure is.
Yeah, it's working.
How are you guys doing?
Good. All right.
Yeah.
Doing really well. Yeah.
Good to be on the radio with you guys.
Yeah, I don't know that. I don't think the three of us have ever done a show before. This is awesome.
Yeah, I don't think we have.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Actually, I don't, yeah. Diana, I don't think you and I have been on Freedom Fiends together at the same time. I know we've podcasted together, but I think this might be the first time we've been on Freedom Fiends. Oh,
well, no, yeah, actually, it was the first time that I ever did a Freedom Fiend show. I think you and I were on together.
Oh, that's right.
And it was when it was last year when I was at the Toronto Bitcoin Conference.
That's right. You know, we're kind of burying the lead here. We're not letting our radio listeners know who we are.
Oh, that's right. We are the Freedom Fiends, and I'm Diana, the Laughing Kitty.
And
I'm Dobby Barker, the Shiny Badger.
Aha. I'm Ben Stone, and I can't remember my radio wrestling.
You're the
the bearded possum.
Possum?
Yeah. Yeah.
The bearded possum, yeah. Oh, and I forgot to say that the Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. No governments. We don't like them.
You know, I used to say in the very beginning of my podcast, this was the very beginning, meaning the first few podcasts that I did, I had it on the bottom of my webpage, and I think I mentioned it in a couple of the podcasts, that since I don't believe that IP is a legitimate law, I don't believe IP laws are legitimate, and I don't believe in them, and I'm opposed to all IP, intellectual property laws, I said that you can take any of the material that I produce, you can distribute it in any way that you want, you can take my name off of it, you can put your own name on it, you can claim that you authored it, you can even claim that it's you speaking, and I don't care.
Awesome. How's the archiving going?
I think it's going pretty good. I know this is the archiving of the Bad Quaker podcasts. There's a team, including Christian, which is Diana's husband.
Yeah.
And
My boyfriend.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oops.
I mean, I don't know. I hate to use the term boyfriend. I really do. Like, I feel like it is a very immature way to put it, but I really don't know what else to say that doesn't sound completely stupid.
Yeah,
like,
man friend.
I mean, I guess I could say significant other, but there's an awful lot of syllables, and boyfriend's just kind of easy to say. So
you could say bae. The kids these days, they're saying bae.
Bae?
So we're not married, but anyway, please continue.
They're putting the archives, a bunch of it is going over at artofnotbeinggoverned.com, which is, they're hosting it over there.
I love that site.
Yeah, I do too. And then a bunch of it's going into the torrents, which is a magical thing that I have no understanding of.
The torrents.
It's something out there in the ether. It's like a series of tubes.
Yeah, exactly.
Not at all a dump truck.
Tubes and wires and whatnot, all that technological stuff on the internets.
So I got into a couple of discussions on Twitter and roundabout in different places that, because I had made some smart aleck comments about ANCOMs, anarcho communists.
Oh, yeah.
And somebody on Twitter said, "Hey, can you go into this a little bit and explain what you're talking about?" Because I had just thrown out, I had just kind of done a troll baiting, just throwing out a smart aleck comment so that if any actual ANCOM saw it, they'd get mad at me and fire back, and then I could mock them, and you know, because that's fun. I mean, it may be rude, but it's fun. And what's Twitter?
Well, it's certainly not difficult to upset them.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's
that's what Twitter's good for.
Yeah, And the
baiting trolls, yeah.
The problem with Twitter is you only have so many characters. I can't remember how many it is.
140.
Yeah, exactly. So you can't really say anything of substance on there. It's really hard to explain anything in that few a number of characters, but you can really upset people if you try. So
use your characters wisely.
Yeah. So I
and prudently.
So that's what I was doing. I threw out some troll bait, you know, and nobody really bit because I've pretty much run off all of those people over time, including all the Rand Paul supporters. I've pretty much angered all them to the point of where they blocked.
Oh wow! I read an article on Art of Not Being Governed about Rand Paul and a certain prominent libertarian who said that it wouldn't be such a bad thing if he became president. And I'm like, what? No. Really?
Yeah. I'm going to have a talk with him.
I know. Come on, Jeffrey.
Jeffrey, we love you, but...
Yeah.
No. Yeah, so anyway, so I said that if the person... So one of the people on Twitter said, hey, you know, explain what you believe about ANCOMS. And I said, okay, I can't on Twitter. There's just not enough space. But listen in on the Freedom Fiends this weekend, and we'll talk about it. So that's specifically why that's specifically why
so this one's going out to Twitter.
Yeah, to the one guy on Twitter.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's specifically why I wanted Davi to come on because he's sort of our
Like so much pressure.
Yeah. You're our regional expert on ANCOMS.
Yeah, yeah. I would love to hear some more from Davi.
Well, yeah, you know, there's a handful of us that used to be ANCOMS, and I'm among those. So, they like to tell me that I haven't taken the time to understand their position, but the fact
Radio
of the matter
silence,
is,
what's going on?
Oh, can you not hear
You guys Davi? Can't hear me?
No.
Weird.
It's weird.
Wow, I can hear Davi. Keep going, Davi, and maybe it'll pop back in, because we're still recording, so...
So okay, what?
Well, I can hear him. I can hear him now.
But you can't hear me.
I can hear you, Davi. I'm sorry. Never mind. I'm not going to explain it. But I couldn't hear you for a second. Now I can.
All right. So what they don't understand is that I've probably written and read thousands of pages more than they have on the topics they're trying to school me on. And it isn't that I don't understand them. It's that I reject them. That they never seem to have a thorough explanation of what happens in their world to the person who rejects their central plan. And that what it boils down to is can I opt out? If it's an anarchy, I can opt out, right? It's not like the state.
Absolutely.
It's not like police are going to come break down my door and like audit my labor theory of value time card, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, so explain it to me. And none of them can. It's just not possible.
Mm-hmm.
Diana, did you see the email that Davi got in response to his involvement at
I'll forward it to you if you didn't get it.
Oh yeah, no, I don't think I've seen it.
It's pretty funny.
Send it over just a second.
It's an anarcho-communist who is trying to explain to Davi what the solution of the world would be if everybody would just do A, B, and C.
Right.
Struck him as an
everybody
epiphany. in the middle of the night. It came to him how the entire communist ideal and workers' utopia could be established in less than a week.
Yeah,
and he's very excited about it and wanted to convince me of it. And we've actually, I mean, it's idiotic, and I mean, we should probably, we'll go into it over the break or after the break because it's a little long and you can read it during the break, but. It's silly. It's magical thinking. It's absurd.
Right.
You know, and the problem...
But that's just how it goes.
The problem that I've had with every single ANCOM that I've tried to communicate with, not the ones... Let me specify, because not the ones that I just, you know, mock into a fight, get them mad, and then they block me. Not those. Mm-hmm. But ones that I've... ones that I've actually attempted to engage in some kind of legitimate... intellectual conversation where I say, now, you know, why do you believe this? Do you believe that? Do you believe this? And why do you believe that? And what, you know, what experiences have you had that cause you to think that this will happen if that happens?
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
I found them to be, and I'm sorry, I know this is offensive to some people, but I have found anarcho-communists to be very simple-minded and very childlike. And their views are... like it's almost like leprechauns and unicorns. It's that silly, and imagination is just like the driving factor of their belief system. It's really, I know that's going to be, anybody who's listening who's an ANCOM is going to be really angry to hear that. But also, anger is a part of the of almost every one of them that I've encountered. They revert to anger very quickly and very easily.
Anger toward the owners of the means of production kind of thing, or just anger in general?
Anger at you because you don't believe them on their word. That the world would be great if all the workers would just unite and do this wonderful thing.
Yeah, that was actually one of the points I made.
But that seems to fly in the face of anarchism, though. Like, that just seems to completely negate. I mean, because anarchism is, to me, is like, you know, I do what I want, you do what you want, let's leave each other alone kind of thing, you know? And as long as we're not hurting each other, then it's all good. It's basically, you know, the... I can't even think of it right now. The principle, you know, the principle that we all adhere to that I can't think of the name.
Non-aggression principle.
Non-aggression principle, right. Yeah, so it's just like, to me, that's what it means to be an anarchist. And it's like, if you know, how are you going to force me to share my property with you? You know, that's just kind of like what I don't understand.
Well, you know, they're not advocating you do your thing and I do my thing. They're advocating everyone does what the labor class says. Like, that's what they're
saying.
Right,
but yeah, so they would basically, you know, essentially the way it works out today, that's, you know, it ends up being the ruling class, and that's kind of, I think, what would happen in that situation. It would end up being the ruling class. Once again, you know.
Yeah, if the labor class rules, it becomes the ruling class.
Exactly. You know, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's why it is magical thinking, because it just would not work out. And I read an interesting quote the other day, and I don't remember who exactly said it, but it said that if the world were to, you know, become completely free market, then the ideals of most socialists could be realized. Which I thought was kind of interesting. Like, I was trying to think of how that would work, and it would just be like, you know, that if the free market were truly allowed to work the way it was intended to work, then everyone, pretty much their needs would be met.
Speaking of the free market, we're going to break away, and you can go visit the
free market.
Not really all that free, but it's a somewhat free market.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Feeds with Michael Dean and his
Ben,
weird friends.
There's a second email at the bottom now. I don't know if you see that. New Hampshire is under quarantine as walking corpses devour the flesh of the living. Max is 11 years old and surviving alone. Slow-moving and non-thinking, the dead swarm his home. Now he must apply his Porcupine Freedom Scouts training to improvise his escape. Look for Survivor Max on Facebook, read reviews on Amazon, or read Chapter 1 at SurvivorMax.com.
Yeah, we should.
Because I pulled up the Wikipedia page.
Okay, here's the music. Freedom Fiends. Yeah. And we're back. And we've been burying the lead.
Worms.
So,
if you bury a lead, it will grow into a lead tree.
You have to water it.
I like that.
So we should have, Diana pointed this out during the break, we should have explained what an ANCOM is and what we are. So an anarcho-communist is a person who is against government, anarchist.
Allegedly.
And
allegedly, exactly.
They believe in the utopia dream of communism, and they think that somehow you can have this the anarchist dream of not having a government and the communist dream of everybody exactly obeying the rules of communism. And somehow these two opposite things, they fit in their minds as coexisting, mm-hmm. Which is kind of silly if you ask me. But
and not completely disregarding chaos theory.
Yeah, and the most obvious thing that it flies in the face of is, what if someone doesn't want to be a communist? Who will force them to be that? And you have to set up the government in order to do that. And you may not call it a government. You may have some, you know, other name for it. But in substance, it's still a government. And that might be the thing.
Yeah, that's,
go ahead, Dubby.
That's too catastrophic. It doesn't even have to be that bad. I mean, even if the whole planet was communist and the whole planet, like, agreed with these principles and ideals, you are still not this is still impossible. Because, like, this guy in his plan, he puts forward this plan that from age birth to 20, you're preparing for productive work. From age 20 to 40, you're engaged in productive work. And from age 40 to retire to death, you're retired and free to do research or whatever. So even if everybody believed he believed about working class and
who's this guy? The guy that emailed you?
The guy that emailed me.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Even if the entire planet believed in his workers' utopia, there are still going to be some of them that think the proper age to begin productive work is 18, and that the proper age to end productive work is 45.
Right.
And those people have to come up with a way to settle that disagreement, and they can't. Mm-hmm. You cannot enforce a central plan like this without squashing that dissent.
Yeah.
So even if it doesn't matter. Like, if some of them aren't communist, even if all of them are communist, it still doesn't work.
Yeah, it really is.
There has to be something. There has to be something to enforce it. You know.
Yeah.
And typically behind force, there's a gun.
Yeah.
So, you know.
And that's you have government. Then you have government.
You have government. Yeah.
And who gets to be in charge? Who gets to be the guys who decide all these things? That's the government.
Yeah. We've already established it. So it's the labor class who will become the ruling class.
This guy outlines a committee of mathematicians smarter than him who are able to make the calculations of objective values.
I read that in your email.
But that's,
I wanted to address that. Here's the thing, though. Think of Pol Pot and think of what happened in Cambodia. When the communists took over, they started killing they wanted to kill, like, all of the teachers, all the professors and all the educators, because those people knew that their system was flawed and they had too much information, and they thought these people are bad because they know too much. So they started killing all the teachers and the professors.
Mm-hmm.
And then it got to the point where they thought, well, you know, anybody who has too much education is going to be a danger to our system, so we have to kill them too.
Right.
And then pretty much anybody who's educated has to be killed. And how are we going to determine who's educated? Well, smart people wear glasses, so anybody who wears glasses, we have to kill them. And this actually happened. This is how it took place in Cambodia. And so
glasses?
They started. Yeah. Anybody who wore glasses, they thought was educated. So anybody who wore glasses, they would just kill them. And this is kind of the thing. Like, the guy in this email.
I didn't even know that.
He has this plan. Well, first you have to get rid of all the accountants, and then you have to trust people who know math to solve your problems and make it all work.
Mm-hmm.
But you just killed the accountants.
Yeah. Right. But I will say that I do like his idea that from 45 on, one does as they please, either advanced studies and research or bumming on a beach, which is my preference. Just saying.
I did all of those things in my 20s, and I was still a productive person. So I did research, I did advanced studies, and I beach bummed, you know, in my 20s. So. Like, should that have been a crime? Should some, workers' death squad come to me and said, I'm sorry, sir, but you're going to have to wait 20 years before you're allowed to sit on this beach? Like, what does it mean?
Yeah, you're going to have squads that go up and down the beaches and check everyone's ID to make sure that they're all qualified of age to be resting on the beach. When we get back from this...
Not to mention, who's to say these things aren't productive work?
Yeah. When we get back, we're going to visit the market again, but we'll be back. I promise, we'll be back.
Okay, worms.
Worms.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
LRN.FM needs your help getting our satellite signal back on in Africa. Our satellite provider had us on at no charge from 2012 through February of this year when they pulled the channel off the air. Now we're trying to raise $22,000 to continue reaching people with the message of liberty in places where it's needed most. Please visit our Indiegogo fundraiser at africa.lrn.fm. Give what you can and share the link with your friends. africa.lrn.fm.
Meow, 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 meow.
That's Lou's. Freedom Fiends. And we're,
yeah, we're back.
See, I told you we would be back. I said it. You didn't believe me.
Yeah.
You, all you people out there on the radio, you didn't believe me. I said, we're going to be right back after the break. And you didn't believe me. You thought we were going to go away forever.
I was skeptical. Toppy was skeptical.
Oh, man.
This is good stuff, Dobby, this email. Wow.
I almost want to publish it. I get these sorts of emails so frequently, mm-hmm, that I almost think that, like, responding to them is not worth my time, and I should just publish the response and then send them the link, you know?
Yeah,
so I can send it to the next guy.
I don't know if I mentioned this.
Yeah, the thing
this
about on. It is that it really is magical thinking, like the things that he says. It's kind of like, you know, this philosophy can work on a very small scale.
No, it can't.
Like two
you don't
people.
Think so?
I've lived in communes. It doesn't work. Not even not even among 10 people.
Really?
All of the catastrophes that you see at the national level in some communist dictatorship occur in the microcosm of 10 people living in a house. Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Nobody wants to do the dishes because it's a tragedy of the commons.
Right.
Yeah, well, that's the roommate.
I don't know, but... Yeah. Yeah, I guess that is true. I guess it depends.
You know how I solved
the
dishes problem when I lived in a commune?
What?
How's that?
I took a Sharpie and I wrote people's names on the back of the plates. That immediately solved the dishes problem. Ownership of the plate translated to cleaning of the plate.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Immediately, overnight.
Property. Wow.
Property solves the problem of the commons.
Fences.
Yeah.
Yep.
Fences, yeah. Okay. All right. I assumed it would work on a smaller scale. I've seen it work on a smaller scale, but not over time. Like, you spend time in a commune.
Let me clarify.
But...
Time, exactly. Thank you. So let me make some nuance here. It can work on a smaller scale among people who are fanatically devoted to it. It's the same as, like, people who use a honest currency when an dishonest currency is still in the market. It's an irrational exuberance. That's what they call it. So if you have a group of communists with an irrational exuberance for communism, it will work. The problem is that enthusiasm is born out of their hatred of capitalism. Mm-hmm. And the moment that they have a child who was born in their commune, that child does not have the experience to hate capitalism. And so they are not enthusiastic about communism, and they will not carry on the commune.
Exactly.
Wow.
Children are generally only enthusiastic about things that belong to them.
Yeah, or things that are fun or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, the point is they don't have the hatred. We were saying, like, so much of this is motivated by hatred, right?
Yeah.
Or anger.
Which is a poor premise to begin with. So, and you know, to start a whole thing based on hatred of something else. I mean,
but so this first thing that I point out about magical thinking, this isn't true of only communists. It's true of libertarians and everybody mm-hmm. else too. And it's that his premise in the beginning was, if all of the workers would just,
yeah,
would just, right, exactly,
like,
yeah,
if all at once every worker in the world at the same time for the same reasons would just do this, it would totally mm-hmm. work. And that's the same magical thinking as, hey, if everyone in the world or everyone in the country just suddenly on the same day went to the ballot box and voted for Hillary Clinton, we could totally change the whole country.
It's yeah.
This notion of if everyone would just, mm-hmm. Your plan is already a failure. It doesn't matter what the goal was. It doesn't matter what the strategy was. If your plan is for everyone to suddenly have the same opinion, it's a failure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned too that that there is a certain amount of fantasy thinking among libertarians, and you really do see that big time when you start being around actual Libertarian Party members, some of them, not all of them, I hate to collectivize with anything like this, but so many of them, especially in my experience, the older ones that have been in the Libertarian Party for like 30, 40 years, and they've, you know, they've invested so much of themselves in the idea that the Libertarian Party is going to be big someday that they cannot imagine that that's just not going to happen. And so
it's like they've never heard of the sunken cost fallacy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they can get angry if you start to point out to them, look, the Libertarian Party is never going to achieve anything higher than a county level of any significance. You know, it's just not going to happen. You might have one freakish event where somebody gets elected to a higher position, but they're not going to last there. And Ron Paul is the proof of that. The guy could not get elected as trash collector unless he was a Republican. And so, you know, now you have to be dishonest. You have to pretend you're something else if you're going to get elected. And now you're lying about it. I mean, essentially, if you're saying, I'm a Republican, I want to be in the Republican Party, I want to, you know, do all these things, and you're not a Republican, and you're not a conservative, and you're actually a libertarian, then you are expressing a lie.
Yeah.
That's my rant.
Yeah, I want to read something here from the notbeinggoverned.com website titled Why We Won't Stand with Rand. And it talks about it mentions Ron Paul, you know, and that, you know, we, you know, not we, but that the idea that if Ron Paul became president, that everything would be just, you know, peachy, and how that's a fallacy as well. And it talks about that since Ron Paul entered office for the second time in 1997, there has been an average increase of 13,000 new regulations per year. Prior to that time, going back to 1789, there was an average of 4,000 new regulations. And so how was small government Ron Paul not a failure? You know, so it's just, I mean, it, you know, and I mean, I love Ron Paul for the fact that he got a lot of people interested in like these new ideas of freedom and, you know, at least small government, if not no government, you know, and you take it, most people say, or, you know, in the libertarian movement, at least this was true for me, that the difference between a libertarian and an anarchist is 6 months. And it took me like 3 months. So, you know, I think that a lot of people that adhere to the libertarian philosophy eventually end up calling themselves anarchists. So, you know,
sure.
It wouldn't work under Ron Paul. It wouldn't work on, I mean, it's that great man fallacy.
Yeah.
It won't, government just does not work.
You know, and it's kind of heartbreaking too, seeing so many people who a year ago, you know, they had the black and gold flag on their identity and in the media and what's it called? Social, what is Facebook and Twitter and all those things?
Social media.
They had the gold and black flag. They call themselves ANCAPs, anarcho-capitalists. They had all of the terminology correct a year ago. And then Rand Paul says he's running for president, and all of a sudden, they are super excited, supporting him. And in my case, they're blocking me from social media because I'm saying I'm not standing with Rand. I'm not standing with anybody but me. I'm me, and I'm standing with me. And whatever Rand Paul wants to do, I don't care.
Right. I thought about this the other day. It comes down simply to this, that I do not need to be governed.
Yeah.
I do not need to be governed. You know, and it's like, if you need to be governed, that's your business, but I don't need to be governed.
Go hire someone if you need to be governed. Hire a life coach.
Right, exactly. You know, personal assistant that can, you know, whatever, but I mean.
And then, you know, the let's go back to beating up this poor anarcho-communist. You know, his email was filled with like partial sentences and run-on sentences. It's like he didn't have a grasp of the English language. He had no idea about punctuation.
Yeah.
And his spelling was atrocious. Now, if you want to express yourself to a stranger on the internet.
So judgy. Yeah.
And I hate to be, you know, I hate to be a grammar Nazi or whatever. But if you're
Here's the thing. I'm the editor of this website. So my job is to be a grammar Nazi. And when people submit these things, they like act like I'm being like ideologically biased when I reject them. But in reality, I have editorial standards. I can't present this sort of stuff to my readers.
Of course.
Here's some monkey scratchings. How come you won't print it? You must be against my ideas.
Right.
Well, yeah, it lends credibility when you have good grammar and punctuation and all that.
Well, here's the thing. Are you guys familiar with the trivium method of I guess it's education? Grammar. What is it? Grammar, logic and rhetoric.
Yeah.
And so grammar is
a foundation.
It's a foundational part. Yeah, right. Go to, what is it, edulution.com or something. Google School Sucks podcast. It's great stuff. Grammar is an essential part of clear thinking, right? And it's the thing that allows me to immediately detect when he says humans under 20 will do blah blah blah, and I can immediately say, wait a minute, that you there's a data payload behind that sentence that you're glossing over, and that's why do they do that, and how do you enforce them to do that? So grammar, logic, and rhetoric is the mental self-defense that I have to identify those red flags, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
So the fact that these people are bad at grammar tells me that they're bad at thinking. These things are integral. These things are connected.
Right.
Right. Right. Like if you can't clearly identify the relationship between words, then that means that you cannot extrapolate the relationship between concepts.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, I'm not trying to call them stupid. This is not like grade school insults or anything. This is a fact of life. Like grammar is not irrelevant to clear thinking.
Yeah.
Right.
I had a job, my last, I guess, big job before I was laid off. I worked there for 17 years, and I was always astonished at the poor spelling and grammar coming from the freaking people that should have had good grammar and spelling, because they had master's degrees. I was appalled.
I worked in an advanced engineering department of a major aircraft engine manufacturer, and my boss above me had multiple college degrees, and the guy was just like that. He could barely put a sentence together, and the weird thing about it was,
how did he get through school?
I have no idea. You know, he got his education while he was in the Air Force. But he couldn't formulate, he couldn't put together a paragraph to send out a notice to everybody under him, hey, I want you to do A, B, C, and D. This is important here. You know, he couldn't do that. He would literally call me into his office, and I would act like a secretary for him, putting together his thoughts for him in his email so that he could send it out and not sound like an idiot. And I'm thinking, how is this guy a manager in a major corporation that builds jet engines?
Exactly.
I don't get this at all. But, I mean, there he was, you know.
It's kind of scary.
Yeah. It's a great thing about America. You can be an idiot and still be wildly successful.
just look at our presidents.
When we get back from this.
Not our presidents, but the U.S. president.
Yeah. When we get back from this little trip to the market, we're going to have more ranting and raving about NCOMs and everything else in the world on Freedom Fiends.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
I had a friend. I had a friend who did a newsletter called The Poop du Jour, and he printed it on toilet paper so that he could replace rolls of toilet paper in the college, and hopefully people would sit there and read it.
That's funny.
That's kind of cool.
And here's some music. We're coming back. Freedom Fiends. Back on the radio.
It's all true. Every word.
We'll just sit here and be quiet and let you think on all that we've said.
Yeah.
Now, listener, I want you all to sit there and be quiet and think about what you've done. I'll wait.
In a corner. Facing the corner.
So we probably shouldn't just bash this poor anarcho-communist the whole show, as much fun as that
is. He sounds really, really young. I will say that. I don't know if that's true or not, but yeah, just based on how you know, he basically in his email, he just sounds like very young.
There is a progression.
Not that young is bad, but
right.
maybe I mean more immature. It's not so much young, but immature.
Childish. but there is, when you're talking to an ANCOM, there is a conversational progression that if you're very careful, you can begin walking them through it. And if they don't lose their temper, it's you can actually take them step by step. So you start to say something like, okay, so there's a problem with property. Your typical ANCOM will have a problem with property. They'll say there's mm-hmm. no such thing as property. And then you say, okay, then I'm going to take your backpack right now. And then they say, oh, no, that's different. There's a difference between private property and personal property. This backpack is my personal property. You just can't have private property. And if you can hold your head together.
I've had this conversation so many
times. My brain is exploding right now.
If you can hold your head together long enough and not scream, that makes no sense. If you can hold yourself together and then you start breaking it down. Okay, so the backpack is your personal property. I can't steal that from you, right? Okay, so we agree on that. What about this? Could I have as my personal property a potted plant? Just like a little daffodil or something in a little pot that I can walk around and hold with me and carry with me. And even when I lay down, in a gutter and go to sleep, I can still hold on to my little potted plant. Can that be my personal...
A petunia or something.
Yeah. Can that be my
petunia,
personal...
Petunia, exactly.
I'll be the communist. Yes, Ben, you can have your potted petunia.
Okay, now what if this is not a petunia? What if it's like a pepper plant, just a little pepper plant that I can that will occasionally, it's like three times a year, it'll produce a pepper, and I can eat that pepper. Can it still be my own property?
Well, no. See, now you've got to submit forms to the Conservation Commission to determine whether or not the plant produces more pepper than would be needed by an individual. And if it does, if it produces a surplus, because surplus is exploitation, and if you produce a surplus of pepper, you're effectively stealing that pepper from the Soviet. And so...
Now, and this is
sorry,
Davi is actually
jump the
making
gun, no, I jumped the gun.
This is the actual
this sounds,
case.
This sounds this like is, exactly what happens in this country.
Yeah, you have to make this progression of thought and allow them to expose the logical fallacies in their beliefs. And using the Socratic method is what I find the most effective. You just begin working with them one question at a time to get them to understand. And try to get them to justify what they're saying by explaining mm-hmm. it. And the more they justify it, the more questions you're going to have getting them to continue to explain it. And eventually, if they have any logic in their brain at all, they're going to realize at some point that they're making no sense whatsoever and they sound stupid.
Yeah, well, what I would like to know is how do they explain the difference between personal and private?
It's how it's used.
Okay.
If a thing is used for sustenance, then it's personal property. Sometimes they'll call it possession instead of property. But if it's used for production, then it becomes capital and should be owned by the workers.
So if it's a pepper plant that produces a surplus of peppers, then that would actually be community property. Or would they consider that to be community property?
Yes. So what they don't understand is that means that you are not free to use your possessions as you see fit.
Right.
There is someone out there who comes and decides whether or not you are using your possessions as mm-hmm. property besides you.
And that someone would have to be the government. Therefore, it is impossible for there to be an anarcho-communist society because, essentially the definition of communism involves some sort of governance. I mean, you can't. Someone would have to be going around forcing people to, to prove that their possession is being used only for their personal use and that it's not producing enough to be shared with everyone.
So the answer to this is usually the Ubermensch. It's that come the revolution, we'll all be better people and we will have selfish desires to disobey the central planners. We will all understand.
We're going to be right back after this break. We're at the top of the hour, but we'll be right back.
All right. Worms.
Worms.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say, you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists like Barack Obama and Al Gore taking credit for the web while trying to take over the web? Are you disgusted by experts whose concept of the internet is that it's a series of tubes? Take back the free market of computing by encouraging software developers to adopt the BIPCOT NoGov license. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows any use or modification except by governments. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
We'll be right back.
Davi.
Through the Libertarian. This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Free Indoctrination Center, Low Orbit, Ion Canyon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza, on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org.
Yeah.
Worms.
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 Have you ever wondered how a thing can be low orbit and in the Alpha Centauri region?
Yes, actually I have. It's a wormhole, Davi. It's a wormhole. Hello.
It's a wormhole.
Whatever. I mean, it's obvious.
You know, we haven't mentioned it in a while, or at least that I've heard. I haven't heard every episode of every show, but there's a reason we say worms. There's actually a couple reasons we say worms.
Mm-hmm.
One reason is that it used
they're
to be
so
cool.
Cute.
Yeah.
It's cute.
We like to keep them in our pockets. It used to be cool for the kids back in the olden days. The cool kids used to say word all the time. And so
yeah,
Michael
word,
and Nima.
Word up.
Yeah. So Michael and Nemus didn't want to do that because that kind of sounds dorky now. And so they started saying worms instead of word. And then it evolved.
And worms doesn't sound dorky at all.
Not at all. And then it evolved. It became
a new thing.
It became our method of letting people know, letting each other know and letting the audience know that we have not been compromised by the government in any way. So if we ever stop saying worm.
Yeah, the worm is a warrant canary.
Yeah, exactly. We ever stop saying worm and start saying word or some other phrase like that, our listeners will know that we have been captured and being held in some secret location in the Utah desert where we're being tortured and forced to play our radio show from there or something like that.
Mm-hmm. And say word
instead
of worms, which everyone would know that's a red flag.
Yeah, that's our warrant canary.
Worms.
Worms. So trolling and comms for fun and profit. I guess we beat that topic as much as we should, huh? We're supposed to be like a positive, upbeat, having fun conversation, not just beating up and comms.
Yeah, I'll tell you. I mean, today I'm having one of those like, ugh, it's hopeless kind of senses about the whole thing. I had a conversation yesterday with some folks at school, which I'm in school right now, and it turned to the topic of police, and I really got on my soapbox about it, about the police, and it just all it did was just make me angry and feel kind of hopeless, and you know, because everybody was looking at me like I'm crazy, and I'm like, you people don't see the insanity of all of this, and I don't know. Anyway, so I mean, the kids kind of could relate, you know, because they're all like F the police kind of thing, but.
I've been feeling that way kind of about progressives in general.
Yeah.
I feel like they're kind of everywhere. It's like this horde of people making irrational demands of things that won't work and will probably do the opposite of what they're hoping they'll do.
Right.
Well, that's where the zombie metaphor comes from, is just the brainless, the hordes of brainless people out there. And then what do you do with them? Wow.
Ignore them, I guess.
You
try to wake
them
up.
The voting franchise. That's what you do.
Right. Just keep right on voting.
Oh wow.
Just vote your little hearts out.
So
I feel like it is sort of winning for some reason, though. Like the sort of irrational promise of endless programs is winning in the hearts and minds of at least university students. So.
Diana, that article that you sent me from JG Vibes, John Vibes, that was a really good article. I can't remember the title of it. I don't have it open in front of me, and my computer is far too slow to get on the internet right now and still use FiendPhone. But that article was kind of hitting that sometimes it just feels like we're overwhelmed, but really, you know, there's a positive side of this. And that's one of the things about JG Vibes that I really like. I used to talk to him on Facebook all the time, and he's a very upbeat person.
Yeah, the article is called You Are a Pioneer of Peace. And so, and what this boils down to me, after having read the article, is that, you know, it's really up to me as an individual, you know, to, I guess, walk my talk. You know, there's only so much that I can do around me. You know, there's that whole sphere of influence thing. And you know, I can be honest and I can answer questions and I can say what I think. But beyond that, the most I can hope for is that I at least plant a seed of some sort to get people to think. And but you know, there's
bury the lead. Is that what you're saying?
Like scream and yell and all that. But I mean, all it's going to do is make me angrier and less peaceful. And, you know, but it's really hard. It's very frustrating, you know, when you walk around like, you know, and all the zombies and, you know, we also like to call them sheep, you know, and it's really, in a way, it's not their fault. They were born into this. I was born into this, you know, but, you know, I was woken up and I can't go back to sleep and I wouldn't if I could. And so I just, you know, I continue to try to educate myself and I continue to try to speak on it and as much as I can and just, you know, kind of hope for the best and just, I don't know. Anyway, try to make it look attractive. You know, I think we've talked on the show before about, you know, attraction rather than promotion, you know, kind of based on AA principles that, you know, if you go around preaching it all the time, you know, and then you don't necessarily, you know, walk, you know, you don't necessarily follow your own beliefs in a way, then, you know, it really doesn't mean anything. But if you actually walk that talk, you know, and you know, I guess Christians would call that, you know, I guess walking the way, you know, of Jesus, but and not going around preaching all the time, then that can be attractive to people. It's like, oh, so why, you know, why are you so peaceful? Like, why are you so happy, kind of thing? And, you know, why do you think this way? And hopefully that's what happens in the long run. But
sure. I mean, that was ultimately my advice to this ANCOM guy was, hey, you know what? If you feel exploited at your job, quit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Because his whole thing is that he's like, wage labor is exploitation because the alternative is starvation. And I'm like, do you know that? Do you know that for sure? Because I quit my job and I didn't starve to death. That's why I know that for sure. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, and his great fear, he said, living under a bridge. And I'm like, you know, I lived under a bridge.
It's not that bad.
Like, so. You know, my advice is stop these grandiose plans of how you're going to centrally plan the whole planet and just put these principles in your life for real, mm-hmm. not hypothetically. Get your nose out of a book, quit your job, and build something. Mm-hmm. Be productive.
Right.
And I mean, that's really like my advice is you don't get to say what everyone will do. You get to say what you will do. You get to make incremental changes in your life and you get to cooperate with like-minded people.
But if he were to do that, he might actually become an ANCAP.
Yeah, probably in about a week or two.
Yeah.
Well, the whole problem, go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, I was just going to say, because it sounds like what he's trying to do is get everybody to think the way he thinks. And yeah, I mean.
Well, why would I follow a guy who won't even quit his job?
Right.
Well, the whole problem with all of these people is collectivism. They mm-hmm. have this idea, and this is not just lefties. This is right-wing people, too. And even a lot of libertarians fall into this trap. But they think that, you know, if everybody would just do A, B, and C, my life would be easier. And you're looking at the thing entirely backwards. It's not what everybody else is doing to make your life better. If you don't do it, if you're not doing what it takes to make your life better, nobody's going to do that for you. Nobody else has that responsibility to fix your life for you. That's your responsibility. Get up off the couch and go fix your life. Stop worrying about whether somebody's exploiting you or, you know, just make your own life. Do your own thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Preach it, Brother Ben.
And trust also, you know, Nima, a long time ago, let's see, where did Nima say that? I think it was in one of his songs. Nima says, trust without truth is for suckers. And that's kind of what all of this, these collectivist people, they want to trust some thing, whether that's a communist system or central planners or the president or some other politician that's going to fix everything as soon as we get them elected. They want to trust these people. They want to trust some great man. But they're not really willing to be truthful with themselves and really, you know, look at it in an honest and just be brutally honest. So they trust without truth.
Yeah, because, you know, the truth is not pretty necessarily. And people, you know, it seems like that a lot of people, myself included, I mean, I've definitely fallen into this trap of distraction, basically, you know, being, you know, being distracted from what is actually really going on. And I, and, you know, and in a conspiratorial way, I think that that's, it's kind of in, on purpose, you know, that the distractions are placed there. So we're not really seeing what the man is doing behind the curtain kind of thing, you know, and I chose for a really long time to ignore that, even though I, deep down, I knew there was something wrong. There is something wrong here. And, you know, I finally figured out what that was. And it's, I mean, it really, it, it, to me, The Matrix is a really good analogy, the movie The Matrix, sure. You know, where, you know, he's unplugged from the system, basically, and sees what reality really is. And it's not pretty. It's not fun. There's no juicy steaks. It's all kind of, you know, like slop, you know, that you kind of have to get through. And, you know, but it's the truth. And if you trust something that is not the truth, really, I mean, I don't know. It's like, it's, it has to be the truth. You know, it, it just has to be like, it can't be, we can't be following a lie. And
but that, the lie has steak.
Yeah. The lie does have steak. It has very juicy steak. That's one that, that's why that one guy was like, I can't deal with this anymore. I need steak and I need women or whatever it was, you know, even though that they were just programs essentially. So
that's the kind of fantasy, though, right. Whether you're expecting the government to provide you this wonderful life or whether you're expecting, you know, central planners to run it. Something that the right wing people never want to face, the truth that they don't want to face, is even the right wing utopia that they hope for with a small government and, you know, strong defense, but a small government. That it's the same thing. It's the same socialist, yeah, collectivist mentality that this little group of great men are going to provide for you something that you can't get any other way without robbing some people to get it.
Yeah.
Very sad. You know, we're getting ready to go to a break, but when we get back, we're going to talk about a whole bunch of other stuff that's really super important. But before we do that, we're going to go away to the market and let the market do its thing.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Hey, this is Squiscar Squiggles from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed, buy sheep for sheep on sheep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Freedom Fiends, Freedom Fiends. And we're back again. See, the breaks don't last forever. We really do come back. We don't vanish. When the commercials come in, we don't vanish and go away. We stay right here, right at the mic, to bring you, the listener, all of the vast amounts of wisdom that we have.
Yeah. So I was thinking that maybe we could read a little bit from this article by JG Vibes, the You Are a Pioneer piece.
Go for it.
Yeah. So Okay, so it's pretty long. I probably won't read the whole thing, but what I like about it is that it does kind of go into, what can we do as individuals, to make the world a better place. I always think about that Michael Jackson song, Man in the Mirror. Yep. I mean, that right there, that meant a lot to me when it came out. And I mean, it's exactly true, we only have control over ourselves. And so the world that we were born into and have found ourselves in today is such a complicated mess that even beginning to think about having a positive impact on society can leave any sane person feeling hopeless and defeated before they even get started. This is how I was feeling yesterday. Our culture has shielded us from the harsh reality of our existence for our entire lives, so being exposed to this reality for the first time can be a very confusing or even traumatic process. To react with incredulous aversion is a common thing for people to do when approached with information that contradicts the ideas that they built their lives around. So that was the first paragraph of the article. And then it says, when it comes to the violence of the state and the corrupt nature of the social institutions that surround us, it is very rare for anyone to take this kind of information lightly. And then here's the paragraph I love. Even after someone is able to see past the lies of the mainstream worldview, the path toward a more peaceful and free existence can be so difficult and frightening that it can seem like an impossible suicide mission. This is the obstacle that prevents most people from even attempting to change or criticize the society that they were brought up in. If creating a free society and a world without war was easy, then I guarantee you that overnight millions of people would instantly be condemning the state and the moral injustice of the violence that it carries out. I actually do think millions of people do condemn the state and the moral injustice, of the violence that it carries out. I think that it's actually already happening all over the world.
More and more.
Definitely more and more. And, I guess in a way, I don't necessarily expect that any real change is going to happen in my lifetime. But I'm hoping and praying that, that the vision that anarchists, peaceful anarchists and capitalists, voluntarists, whatever you want to call yourself, label yourself or whatever, that, that vision will eventually, spread more and more. And, and it doesn't have to be a violent revolution. And I necessarily don't think it will be. I think it's going to be more technological in nature. And I think that one of the things that we were going to talk about was Bitcoin. And I think that that's probably one of the ways that there will be a revolution. And there is a revolution going on right now. So do we want to talk about Bitcoin a little bit?
Sure. Davi's he's kind of a genius on that.
I'm a spokesman, maybe.
A spokesman. So I was on a show recently with MK and Michael a couple of weeks ago where we talked about Bitcoin in this respect a little bit. And I think that, for our listeners, we probably do want to explain Bitcoin in a way that is understandable by most people. And I would really like to hear what you have to say about it, Davi. Personally,
sure.
I would anyway.
So Bitcoin is essentially a piece of software that is it's controlled by a network as opposed to an individual, and so it is not easily amendable, and so it lays out some rules for a digital currency, and that is that it is transferred easily on a public ledger very quickly and easily without any forms or usernames or passwords, although you can set up usernames and passwords. And in addition, it is a fixed quantity. So they are released at a fixed rate to people who are servicing the network, and at some point they reach a cap of 21 million, and then there will never be more. Mm-hmm. And as a result, it's a deflationary currency as opposed to an inflationary currency. And there's some sort of technical gibberish about how the thing works and how the thing's mined and all that, but that's essentially it. It operates mm-hmm. very similar to online banking software, where you put in the address you want it to go to, you put in the address you want it to receive to, and send it back and forth like a text message.
When we get back from this trip to the market, we're going to have some more to talk about with Bitcoin, and more with Diana, and more with me, and more with Davi. So stick with us.
Worms.
Worms. You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've been using Block It Pocket, and I love it. Block It Pocket protects your cell phone, tablet, or laptop from remote tracking and data theft. I've tested it. It works. Put your cell phone inside, call from another phone, and the phone in the Block It Pocket won't ring because all signals in and out are blocked. Avoid calls and texts at the wrong moment. Keep your location private. Protect passports and credit cards. Water-resistant, hand-washable, and stylish in many designs. Go to blockitpocket.com. That's blockitpocket.com.
Freedom Fiends. On the radio. And on the inner tubes.
We're inner tubing through the torrents. Is that what you're saying?
That's right. That's exactly what we're doing.
Inner tubing through the torrents. I have to write that down someplace. So Davi was telling us about Bitcoin. Now, as I understand it, Davi, Bitcoin is an evil thing that criminals use to do horrible stuff with. Is that right?
Money laundering, drug buying.
It's the number of the beast.
It's the number of the beast. Wait, I thought that was social security numbers.
Yeah. Or credit card, any number really. We should really be very cautious and skeptical of any use of numbers.
That's why we should round up all the mathematicians, right?
Fear the numbers. Yeah.
Anyone with glasses.
Anybody with glasses. Oh my gosh. It just so happens I'm not wearing my glasses right now.
Well,
so
then you're safe.
For now. I'm safe.
So this is a really interesting objection to Bitcoin, and I get this when I present on it. People say, well, how are you going to keep the terrorists from using Bitcoin, and how are you going to keep the drug dealers from using Bitcoin?
How do we keep terrorists and drug dealers from using cash? FRNs, so Federal Reserve Notes. Right, I mean,
it has never in the entire history of humanity been the role of the medium of exchange to police transactions.
Exactly. Can you imagine the olden days? There's this stagecoach going across the prairie, right? And the robber jumps out with his pistols pulled, and he says, "Stand and deliver." And the man stands up and stops his horses. He stands up on the stagecoach, throws off the strong box. The robber shoots the lock off the strong box, opens it up, shoves the gold into his pocket, and the gold jumps back out of his pocket and goes running away, saying, "You can't get me! You can't get me!"
Yeah. So
that's a nice. That's a funny image.
The answer is,
you might use me for ill. Right? Exactly. I don't care. Yeah. Good point.
So, you know, it's not the role of money to police how people use it. It's sort of the same as saying guns don't kill people, people kill people. So money doesn't launder money, people launder money.
Right.
So I don't consider that a serious objection, but people are afraid of it because, you know, some people are just afraid of everything.
Right, yeah. And that's why there's like a gazillion regulations and laws on the books, because of fear.
Yeah.
The dreadful fear that there might be someone somewhere having fun, I think, is how
having fun. Exactly.
So this is kind of interesting. We said earlier that sort of like part of the root of communism or even progressivism is anger. Mm-hmm. I read a study once that said, psychologically speaking, the left is motivated by anger and the right is motivated by fear. Mm-hmm. And when I first heard that, I thought that's got to be backwards, right? Because typically the left are the peaceniks and the right are the warmongers. So wouldn't it be intuitive to say that the warmongers are the ones motivated by anger? Mm-hmm. But the way that I sort of came to understand this was to look not at sort of what they advocate, but by what they use to motivate people.
Right. Yeah.
If you look at what the left uses to motivate people, it's people who are offended, people who are righteously indignant, people raising their fists and saying, you know, resist we much.
Mm-hmm. It's also envy, too. Yes. Envy drives them a lot. Yeah.
Well, and envy makes people anger. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
But you look at the right and what the right uses to motivate people, and it's they're taking our jobs, they're invading our country, you don't want to speak German, do you? It's all appeals to fear. Even though the result is violence, it's always an appeal to fear. Mm-hmm. And so that's the conservative objection to Bitcoin. or really any new technology is, mm-hmm. this is an untested ground. This right. is the new frontier. We need to preserve the traditional ways. We can't allow these people to, you know, unemploy the horseshoers.
Well, right, yeah, and some of the objections I've heard from the left have to do with, oh, well, you know, only rich people use Bitcoin. You know,
yeah, it's a privilege. So, it's privileged,
right?
I've come across that objection too. I was at a hacker convention at a place. It was called Hack Meet in San Francisco, and I was blogging for an Honest Currency blog, a Silver Circle blog. And so I went. I said, I want to talk to all these computer hacker types about what they think about Bitcoin. And unbeknownst to me, Hack Meet or this place was a left anarchist hacker space. And so they essentially their objection was, oh, well, Bitcoin doesn't solve the problem of alienation from labor, which is a communist thing. And so, yeah, that's their objection. Their objection is that it makes commerce easier and commerce is bad.
Yeah. Tell the basket maker in Kenya that commerce is bad.
Right.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, that's part of the left fallacy, though, is that they think, like, it's the accusation that, Davi, that you exploit children when you employ a 16-year-old to sell for you. It would be better if that 16-year-old was to starve to death than to work. I mean, that's kind of the thinking that they have. That's why they want to go and
follow it to its logical conclusion.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. which is what they can't do.
That's the fear. That's what the guy said to me in the email. He said, how dare you threaten this girl with starvation to make her work for you? And I'm like, first off, like, I didn't ask her to work for me. She came and asked to work for me, mm-hmm. right? I didn't even have a, like, now hiring sign out. She came to me with a proposition of her own volition to say, hey, I'll sell your stuff for 20%. I'm like, yeah, sure, go for it. But the other thing is, if she didn't do that, she wasn't going to starve. Like, starvation was not on the table in this scenario, right?
Right.
Like, so maybe it is for some people somewhere, but... So this is the thing. People say, like, stealing is wrong. Oh, yeah, well, what about if you're stealing bread because you're hungry? And this is sort of like these, like, ethical conundrums. Like, if you're all in a boat and the boat can only carry 10 people and there's 12 people on the boat, how do you decide which two to throw off the boat? And it's like, that's not – no. What you do is you throw two people out of the boat. You have them swim for, like, 8 hours while the rest of the people sleep. And then when they wake up, you rotate. That's how you solve that problem. Like, if
you – swim for 8 hours?
Or 4 hours or whatever. Like, the point is that there is – the question is set up fallaciously to say the only choices are to steal the bread or to purchase it is wrong. You could also approach the baker and say, hey, you know, you have a lot of flour on the ground. You mind if I, like, sweep it up for a loaf of bread? Like, did the person try anything other than stealing before they stole the bread because they were hungry? Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the reason that they don't do that now, the reason that a person doesn't go into a place and says, hey, do you have any odd jobs? Can I take out your trash for a sandwich? Is because that would be illegal.
Yeah,
because of minimum wage laws and insurance regulations and things like that. It's actually very difficult to hire people. So
I got my first job in construction by doing almost exactly that. I went to the owner of the construction company and I said, please, you know, I want a job. I can do what you guys do and I would be very effective working with you. And I was 13 and it was against the law. And he said, well, first off, you know, it's against the law for me to hire you. Second, if I gave you this job, it would mean that I'm not giving it to some man who has a family to support and bills and things like this. And he said, not only would I be settling for a lesser worker being a 13-year-old kid who can't keep up with the men, I would be taking this job away from a man who I could be hiring and have work for me, you know, better as a worker, and I would be supplying money for his family. So I broke it down. This is 13, and I broke it down for the guy. I was like, look, here's the thing. First off, I can keep up with the workload of any man that you've got working for you. That's point one. Point two, is a man more important than me because he's older than me and because he has gotten himself in a situation where he has bills and no job? Does that make him more important than me? And the guy had to say, no, he's not more important than you. Okay, so if one of us is not more important than the other due to age, and if I can keep up with the workload, then the only argument you have is that it's against the law to hire me. And if you pay me in cash, and, you know, construction situation, nobody's going to know either way. And he's complimented me, said that's a very good argument, but I'm still a little
hesitant.
But
did you get the job?
I told him I would work for him for no charge, and you see how I work, and if you decide to pay me, you pay me. And so I got the job.
Wow.
And
that's awesome.
Now, here's the moral of the story, not really, but it was my dad. My dad owned that construction company. And I knew every day that I had to go out there and I had to work not only better than the slackiest man there, I had to work as good as the best worker. I had to beat that guy every day. Otherwise, I wouldn't keep my job.
Listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN or virtual private network from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
In the third act.
Yeah.
So Diana, you were going to read some more for us.
Yeah, from this article, you are a pioneer of peace. I didn't read the whole article, but I think that, you know, you have the gist of it. But the last few paragraphs really kind of sum it up very nicely. He goes on to say, this is a worthwhile goal, though, to do what we can during our lives to leave the world and the human consciousness in better condition than they were when they were left for us. In all reality, one could argue that this is the meaning of life. It is not an easy path to take, and there is no guarantee that you will see the fruits of your labor in your own lifetime. But any new frontier is always shrouded in the same sort of uncertainty, danger, and controversy. The creation of the world's first free society in recorded history is simply the most recent frontier in the realm of human consciousness, just as space exploration is the most recent frontier in the physical realm. Just 100 years ago, if you told someone you were going to build a rocket to fly people into outer space, you may have run the risk of being committed to a mental hospital. Yet despite popular opinion, the human imagination has once again defied our previous conception of reality by exploring new frontiers and pushing beyond the boundaries of what was said to be possible. If you are reading these words, then you are without a doubt in the midst of today's great frontier, which is the fight for freedom and the search for peace. You are a pioneer who has the courage to journey into uncharted territory and be your own map maker. Along with the millions of others worldwide who are beginning to find their purpose, you have the ability to change the world for the better in your lifetime, no matter what kind of situation you come from or where you call home. You have found yourself on a rewarding but arduous and sometimes lonely path. I know because I've been walking this path for the better part of my life, and some years ago I passed the point of no return to where this path has now become my home. After realizing there was no turning back, I have tried my best to find the beauty and positivity that surrounds me on this path that I have chosen, and I have found a lot to be optimistic about. I have also made a lot of mistakes and wasted too much time worrying about things that I shouldn't have. All of these experiences, both good and bad, have resulted in the essays contained in this book. And the book he's referring to is called Alchemy of the Modern Renaissance, which I am going to go purchase for my Kindle if I can and read it.
I don't think he's
really like this guy.
Yeah, J.G. Oh, no? Vibes is pretty cool.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
He's a really cool guy. And And he's very positive. I think I said that earlier. Yeah. I can't remember if it was in the first hour or the second hour. Mm-hmm. But he's a very positive person, and he's just fun to interact with because he's, you know, upbeat.
Has he been around any of the conferences and stuff or festivals or anything?
He and I almost met at Porkfest, and I think it was at the Liberty Forum. I'm not sure. I can't remember now that we just didn't see each other. We just missed each other. But he goes to stuff like that now and then. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised.
Yeah, I'm actually thinking.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I'm actually thinking about going to one this weekend that I just realized is going on here in North Carolina. It's the Liberty Fest. And it's actually starting today. Yeah, it's only about an hour from where I live, so I think I'm going to be going to that.
Yeah, the Blue Ridge.
Why the redundancy? Is it in a place called Liberty?
Yes.
Yeah. Liberty, North Carolina.
There you go.
Yeah, the Blue Ridge something project or Blue Ridge Liberty Blue Ridge.
Blue Ridge Liberty Project?
Could be.
They probably have something to do with it, but I don't really know enough about it. But I do plan on going, I think. So
groovy. Well, let us know how it goes.
Yeah. Yeah,
I will. Yeah, I haven't been to anything like this in a while. I didn't get to go to Liberty Forum, and I'm not sure about Porkfest. I'm hoping. I thought I could. I'm not sure. I'm still not sure. So anyway, this has been a great show.
Yeah, it's been real nice talking to both of you. You too,
Dobby. Yeah, for sure.
So we're going to do this again pretty soon. Not wait around for how long has it been, Diana, since you and I? That's been like a year, right?
It's been a year. Yeah, I've been doing this for about a year now. A little over a year at this point.
Oh, we didn't even get to talk about Better Call Saul or any of that stuff. I was hoping to do that without you. Now the music's in, and we're going out, and it's over. The show's over. Oh, no.
Yeah, I comment on Better Call Saul on Twitter fairly frequently. I love that show.
Cool.
I would say it's definitely up there with Breaking Bad. Worms.
Worms.
Worms.